You're listening to Up Your Game, a weekly show designed to turn dreams into goals and goals into reality. Here's your host, entrepreneur and content creator, De Niro B.
What's going on, Game Changers? De Niro B here with another episode of Up Your Game. Now, before we dive into the content and we're going to start dropping some value bombs, wanted to ask you to please subscribe to this podcast. If you haven't done that already, it helps me and it helps you stay on top of all the new episodes that we release every single week. Also, if you haven't, please share this podcast with your friends. It's important because if you're on the rise, you want your friends to be on the same page as you are. You don't want them to slow you down, but most importantly, you want to help your circle grow with you. All right, so let's get started.
What is going on, Game Changers? De Niro B here with another episode of Up Your Game. Today, I'm here with Tracy Bissett, President and Chief Financial Fitness Trainer at Bissett Financial Fitness, Inc. Tracy is on a mission to redefine the world's economic future by increasing the financial literacy of entrepreneurs, also known as financial fitness. She has over 20 years of experience in the financial services industry, and she's been helping entrepreneurs across all industries, both on and offline. Tracy is also a professor at Centennial College's School of Business and regularly leads speaking engagements to increase financial fitness awareness. Now, I'm really excited to have this chat with her because I know that a lot of people have these big picture ideas very clear, but they get lost when it comes to this very topic. So Tracy, how are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for having me, De Niro.
No problem. Thank you so much for being on the show today. So before we get into the questions and start really giving some value to the listeners regarding financial freedom and finances in general, I wanted to know more about when you decided to get into this field and what made you decide to get started in this field.
Well, it's a good question. When I was young, I certainly had lots of entrepreneurial spirit and was doing a lot of different things to make money. Then I went on to business school, got a bachelor of commerce, a master's in business. And then I got a job at a big Canadian bank, so TD Bank. And I thought, I'll work here a few years and see how it goes. And then I always envisioned I would go and end up working in one of my clients' businesses. So I worked in commercial banking and risk management, so helping entrepreneurs get access to the money that they needed and then eventually approving the loans. Well, fast forward 16 years later, quite a long career in banking and certainly lots of fun and learned a lot of stuff. Then there was some restructuring and I took the time to think about what are the things that I've really enjoyed in my life. What are the things I like to do? And so in 2016, I started Bissett Financial Fitness. And so I work with adults as well as entrepreneurs to help really take the mystery out of money as a coach for them.
Awesome. Super, super cool. Listen, so let's dive in the questions here. I wanted to know what the biggest mistakes you see entrepreneurs making when it comes to their finances.
Great question. I mean, the thing I see most often is that people go into business because they're absolutely passionate and they have exceptional skills in whatever their business is about. And unfortunately, you don't necessarily get trained in your finances. So couple of things. The first is that kind of ignoring the numbers. The numbers will take care of themselves and not really spending too much time on it, perhaps too much delegation to a bookkeeper or an accountant. And I can tell you that without regular review of your numbers, without comfort in understanding your cash flow, it's really hard to grow your business. So really critical that entrepreneurs get to know their numbers. The second thing is looking at them way after the fact. So I know a lot of entrepreneurs will get their year-end statements. So if December was their year-end, they may get them in June, and now they're looking at results that are anywhere from 6 to 18 months old. And it's really hard to plan for future growth and for the future of your business when you're looking in the rearview mirror and seeing all of this outdated information.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. Is it true that I know a lot of business owners that I've spoken in the past, they said, hey, I'm going to just kind of try and make more money and things will solve. Like, have you ever seen anybody make that big mistake of thinking that as long as they make more money, they're going to be fine?
Yeah. And I think when you say make more money, it's probably just drive sales levels, right? So
yeah,
they're going to sell more. And yeah. So I would say that absolutely that's where entrepreneurs tend to focus is on the sales. And I usually challenge that notion to think more about the profit, because if you're selling $100 worth of something and you're not making any money off it, you're certainly going to magnify that loss when you're selling 10,000, 100,000, a million. And so it's really important to make sure you're pricing appropriately your product or your service. Also to make sure you're getting paid. And so to focus on that bottom line, I'd say, is more critical than the top line.
For sure. So actually talking about how to price your services, I wanted to know what tools that people would need to understand their financial position and also, you know, assess costing and profits and start really making money with their business, not only making sales, like you were saying.
So I'll start first with the pricing. So it's really important to kind of do a deep dive. Think about the main things that you offer, whether it's a product or service, and figure out how much does it cost to deliver that. So if you're a coach and you're delivering coaching services, what is your time worth? If you're selling a physical product, how much does it cost to make that that you're selling? And then you need to think about those other things in your business that you have to pay for, whether or not you have any sales. So you may have a physical location you've got to pay rent for, or you may pay for insurance, some programs you may have on your computer. And so all that stuff needs to be covered too. And then it becomes a little bit of a function of what will the market bear. So doing a little bit of research into who else is out there doing what I'm doing. Is my product or service more valuable? And what can I charge? And then kind of put those two pieces together and see if it makes sense. Sometimes people have to pivot their offering once they see that, you know, I can't really get this to the place that I want from a profit standpoint unless I dramatically increase the scale. And that's okay, because once you know that, then you can drive for those high sales. So important to understand that so that you're making informed decisions as you're going about it. The other thing that's so critical that I could spend hours talking about every day, and I spend time teaching my students as well at Centennial College, is all around understanding the cash flow of your business. So what is the cycle? When do you have to outlay money? Are you paying for staff, for your team? Are you paying for rent, insurance, as I mentioned? And then understanding when the money comes into you. Do you have a type of business where you don't part with your product or service till you get paid? Or do you allow people to pay you later? You send them an invoice and they may pay you in 30, 60, 90 days. Because oftentimes when that money comes in and when that money goes out, it doesn't really line up. And that creates the cash flow crunch that so many entrepreneurs face. And certainly it is a real challenge and real struggle. So the sooner you can understand it, the sooner you can manage it and come up with some proactive plans to deal with any shortfalls when they happen.
For sure, for sure. And you were saying about the tools you need to understand. So you were talking about the cash flow or something else that you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a solopreneur, you're a freelancer, you don't need to invest in really expensive tools. You can use something as basic as an Excel spreadsheet and just start putting in the numbers so that you can get a feel for what's happening. It's good to project into the future and then come back and see what actually happened in those months. So depending on how many transactions you have going on, if it's a small number because you may do some bigger contracts, why not even just do it on a piece of paper? So it's not about being complicated, but it's about knowing those numbers. And once you know the facts, you can plan a lot easier for the future.
For sure, for sure. Now, a lot of the listeners that I have on my podcast are, as I said, solopreneurs as well as freelancers, and most of them offer services. And some of them have asked me in the past, Niro, how do I make sure that people pay me on time? And sometimes let's say, for example, if you're doing Facebook advertising or Google advertising for someone, they may bill them either at the beginning of the month, if they're lucky, but if they had to maybe come to an agreement during the sales process and they just said, you know what, instead of giving you a discount, I'm just going to charge you at the end of the month. There you go. They maybe invoice the client at the end of the month and the client takes their sweet time, maybe like 2, 3, 4 weeks, even 5 weeks sometimes. So how do you suggest people go about structuring the way that they get paid when they run a service-based business?
Great question. And I've worked with so many clients who face those similar situations. I think that when you, especially the situation you just outlined, I think that when you're in that situation, you may want to set different parameters where some has to be paid deposit up front. You can be paid for your service portion after the fact and invoiced after it. But it is very unreasonable for a company to expect a small business owner to float all of those ad buys because they can be extremely significant and it's a huge outlay of cash. If you are going to give them a little bit of latitude, check your terms with, whether it's Google, whether it's Facebook, and see what are your timeframes where you have to remit the money, and then allow them to pay you, maybe not at the beginning as a deposit, but maybe a couple weeks in, that you can make those payments. Small businesses are not in the position to be able to be the banker, if you will, for other clients. They don't have the cash flow availability, and it's certainly not something that they're set up to do. Another thing that can help with that, and I really encourage business owners, solopreneurs, freelancers, anybody who's running a business, is to get access to credit as quickly as possible. So if you're just starting out, you are a solopreneur or a freelancer, they're going to base that on your personal credit score. But you should be getting a line of credit and a credit card set up that you, so that you do have something you can fall back on if you need to.
This episode is brought to you by Phoenix Planner at phoenixplanner.com. I've been using the Phoenix Planner for 3 months now, and as soon as I started using it, I dropped every other productivity tool I was using. The Phoenix Planner lets me set my 3 to 5 year goal, then it breaks that down into a yearly one. Now, once the big picture is complete, it makes you set 4 quarterly goals, and that's when the real planning starts. Phoenix Planner allows you to schedule weekly, daily, and monthly tasks. It has a monitoring system for tracking your habits, and it works as a journal too. On the daily pages, you can write down your focus and what you're grateful for. Now, remember that gratitude is the key to keeping yourself grounded and in control every day. There are also slots for rating your performance and giving yourself feedback. In a nutshell, the Phoenix Planner is the ultimate planner if you want to take your life and business to the next level. Visit phoenixplanner.com to get 20% off your order. Apply the code PHOENIXDEN at checkout. That is PHOENIXDEN for 20% off your order. And now, let's get back to the episode.
For sure, 100%. Awesome. Listen, I actually wanted to see, how can you effectively analyze your financial statements and discover what lenders really care about at the end of the day? Because I know a lot of people want to go and get some money, but they're kind of confused as to how to apply and what to look for.
Absolutely. And so my role as a financial coach is to really take the mystery out of the money and to help business owners understand their financials. And so it's very standard that whatever you were doing to that led you to your company, it probably didn't teach you about the numbers. So first step is to really learn what those financials statements mean, look at them regularly so you have your profit and loss or income statement. The thing that can be confusing is that the statements have a lot of different names, and you'll hear people calling them different things, but that's really the statement that just tells you how much sales you had and what your expenses were for a certain period of time. Make sure you understand all those expenses. Then the balance sheet is really around what are the things that you own, and then who did you owe money to, and what equity have you put into the business. And so it's starting with the basics, understanding the way they work. Then you can move on to learning about financial ratios. When you go to a bank and you apply for credit with your company and you have your company financials, they're putting it into a software at the bank and they're running those ratios. So if you can start to understand how somebody may look at your company, you'll be in a better position to talk about potentially those things that may not be as ideal that the bank is looking for. And it's okay if some things have happened in the past where maybe it didn't go as planned and the results were not as strong as you wanted. But the fact that you know that and you can have a conversation with the banker about it shows a significant level of management credibility, and that you've learned something and that you're able to move on and do something different in the future if the same situation were to happen again. So it's all about building blocks and increasing your education. Not necessarily something you're going to learn overnight, but I believe by putting consistent action towards your goal of increasing your financial knowledge, you'll be able to get those basic knowledge blocks and then able to go on and understand those ratios and what those lenders are looking for.
Awesome. So I actually had another question. You brought up the fact that people could ask for a line of credit. And mm-hmm. I know some people have tried it in the past, but sometimes line of credits are attached to maybe like a property, for example, a home equity line of credit. So like, how do people go about getting a line of credit if they're basically just starting out and didn't really have a big financial history behind them, you know?
Great question. And I get that all the time. It's really important that you, and I'm glad that you asked it because I didn't mention this. It's important that you establish credit in the company's name. So it has to be for your business and you're starting to build up that credit history there. And so if you are a young entrepreneur, you may not have a lot of personal credit history as well, but the fact that you're establishing this credit and a line of credit not secured by anything, the limit might be small at the beginning. And while they are extending it to your company, they will be looking at your personal credit score. And so over time, that line will be able to grow as your credit history grows. But it's really important to set the stage and start developing that credit history in the business. There may be other ways that you can go about it. If perhaps you had a silly situation, maybe you were in university or college and you took out a credit card and didn't really understand how credit cards worked at that time. And maybe you had late payments, maybe you got into a little bit trouble and your credit score was hurt. That's a pretty common situation that happens to students. You might even need to start off by securing the line of credit with some cash for a little while, just so they get comfortable that you have a good pattern of repayment. And over time, you get that released. Now it's based on the improved credit score. And so there's always lots of options. And by talking to people that you know and trust, so it could be a financial coach, could be friends, could be family, could be the banker. How do I go about doing this? It's always important to be open-minded and ask questions so that you can find a solution to the challenge you're facing.
Okay, awesome, for sure. Listen, Tris, what are most entrepreneurs doing right with their money right now that may not realize and they, you know, should give themselves credit for?
That's one of my favorite things. When I start working with most entrepreneurs, they tell me they're terrible at money. They don't know anything about it. And I will say to them, well, how long have you been in business? And so if you've been in business for any length of time over kind of one day or one month, I can say with certainty that you do know how to manage cash flow. And you probably don't call it that. You probably don't even think that's what it is. But if you've been able to juggle sales and then paying bills, you do know how to manage cash flow. And so I find that entrepreneurs tend to be really hard on themselves and not give themselves enough credit. If they have been doing regular bookkeeping, that's another thing that's going well. They do have an accountant. If they've been saving up their money for taxes, especially as an incorporated solopreneur or freelancer, got to make sure you got your taxes ready when you have to remit to the government. So there's so many things that they're doing right, but because they don't necessarily have the technical knowledge or the formal terms around the financial pieces, then they feel like they don't know very much. But there's so many great things happening in their businesses from a financial standpoint.
For sure. So I wanted to ask you a question about incorporating the business because I have a corporation and I did talk to a lot of my coaching clients about the difference between the two, but I just wanted to hear it from someone that really is in the business of, in general, like for finance, as well as, when it comes to business structure. So what is the biggest difference, especially when you're when you are a solopreneur? Is it important for you to incorporate, or do you suggest people getting started and maybe getting their feet wet with a simple business without having to incorporate it in the beginning? Maybe with either a partnership or just on their own.
Yeah, so another great question I get a lot. I think that you want to think about what do you want the business to be. If it's kind of a side hustle and you don't expect your revenue to be very significant ever, probably just doing it under your own name with a doing business as company name would be fine. Mm-hmm. In Canada, if you're going to be over $30,000 in revenue, you do have to remit your taxes to the government. And so if you do have plans to grow your business to any significant size for you and potentially replace a paycheck that you had, I'm all in favor of incorporating right away. Starting things up appropriately and doing them correctly. It's a lot easier to do everything on a small scale and then have it grow with you as you grow versus trying to switch over after the fact. couple of things to keep in mind. If you are incorporated, you do need to file financial statements annually with the government in Canada. And so there is a fee to get your accountant to do that. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing, though, that is a major benefit of being incorporated is it protects you from liability in terms of, say, one of your clients, you gave them advice, you're a coach, and they were unhappy with that and they did something that they felt you contributed to. If they sued you, they're only going to be able to go after the assets in the company, the incorporated business, and not anything personally. So it's a way that you will protect yourself. So a couple considerations on that. But if you're going to grow your business, I highly suggest you do it from the beginning so that you've got your bookkeeping set up right, you've got everything set up to grow, and you're not trying to make that transition when you're in the really busy time in the throes of growing your business.
100%. And when it comes to retaining the profits, because I heard a lot of people in the past telling me, you know, that's a great idea because corporate taxes are much lower than income tax, which it is true. But just so that we have someone, you know, like a professional telling my listeners about how to use the cash within the corporation, what should people do when they get paid? Should they treat the profits as their own, or should they plan to spend that money only within the business and then pay themselves through maybe bonuses or through something else? Actually, like, yeah, what do you suggest people do in this stage, at the early stages when they incorporate?
So it brings up a couple of things for me. So whether you're incorporated or not, you should always have separate bank accounts for the business. So that's really important, first and foremost. When you are incorporated, you can actually, as a shareholder, take money out in one of three ways. You can have a salary, so like a T4, if you were working for somebody else in Canada, so you get your salary. You can take out dividends, and you can also withdraw money as a shareholder loan. So if you invested money in the business that way in the first place, it's a repayment. If not, it might be just a loan to you. And each of those is going to have different tax treatment. Certainly, by keeping funds in the business, you're going to be able to support the growth. And one thing I didn't mention earlier, but entrepreneurs tend to strip all of the cash out of their business, which makes it hard to grow. And growth is really hungry. When I was a kid, we used to play Pac-Man all the time. So if you envision kind of eating up those little balls, that's what the growth in the business does. And it needs cash to grow. So you do need to keep some money there. You mentioned the lower tax rate. So through a combination of salary, dividends, shareholder loans, you can work with your accountant to minimize the taxes so that it makes sense for you. With what we're seeing with some of these relief programs with coronavirus that the government's putting out, there has been requirement for certain levels of salary. And so thinking into the future about the different possibilities of things that could occur, it usually does make sense to pay yourself through a different combination of the ways that you can do it, and with an eye on keeping taxes minimum.
Makes total sense. Awesome. So what do you think entrepreneurs need to be accountable for?
I think that they need to be accountable for the financial position of the company, the financial state and where it's going, and the plans for the future. I don't think they need to do their own bookkeeping. They don't need to create their own financial statements, but at a minimum, monthly should be reviewing those results, making sure they understand them, and then using them to make plans for going forward.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And when it comes to the actual, I would say, like, the best practices on how to set up a good schedule, let's say you said monthly, do you suggest doing it at the beginning of the month, like maybe like within the first 10 days of each month, middle of the month, end of the month? How do you think people can start this great, you know, financial habit of keeping track of their finances?
I would recommend if money is not something you're comfortable with and the financials are not something you spend a lot of time on, I would recommend having a weekly money meeting with yourself to look at different aspects of your business. And if you have a bookkeeper who's doing the work for you, they're not going to be able to actually do the books and get those financial statements ready probably until the second week of the month by the time they get the statements from the bank. And so you'll probably be in a position to review those numbers the third or fourth week of the month. But during those other weeks, you can be looking at different aspects and starting to plan for the future. You can be looking at, how did my cash flow go last month? What should I be thinking about is going to happen over the next few months? Did I miscalculate some things, or did the world fundamentally change and now I need to make some updates to my projections? And it could be as very basic in your very first meeting of just going online and looking at your bank account and looking at the different things that are going through your account and starting to get comfortable. So everybody's going to start in a different place, but taking mm-hmm. that consistent weekly action, making it a routine is really important. And so to get you started, I actually have a gift for your listeners, Daniel. And if they go to cashcoach.biz, you can download a money meeting agenda to get you started. Because I know this show is all about creating good practices that will help your business grow. And so it's cashcoach.biz where you can get started with your money meeting agenda.
That's awesome. Okay, perfect. I'm actually going to put that in the show notes and I'm going to put it in big letters right there at the bottom of the show notes. That's amazing. Thank you so much. One of the last questions that I wanted to ask you was, do you suggest, I've heard other people and I had other people on the podcast suggesting maybe to open different bank accounts for tax purposes so that people don't get, you know, the almost, they don't just tap in that money that's super easy to access, right? Let's say if you have a bank card that has both accounts, all the accounts on one card, it's easy for someone to get tempted and use it. Do you think it's a good practice or do you think that people should just learn how to not look at that bank account? What do you see? What do you've seen work? What do you see didn't work?
So what I see most of the time is only one bank account. Sometimes it's a personal account and everything's kind of commingled. So we don't want to see that. I want to see you have at least one business account. And ideally, just like you suggested, you are going to have different accounts for not only those tax remittances that you're going to have to make, but if you do have plans for growth in your business, you're taking a portion of the profit that you make and setting it aside so that it's there to do those investments in your business. That helps you then when you're looking at your main operating account where the day-to-day stuff is going through, helps you see how much money do I have potentially to take out for myself. I want to go on a vacation or for other things, but you've got that other part taken care of. And it's not that you need to move, let's say if we're talking about sales tax, you don't need to take 100% of the sales tax that you collect. If you look back over your historical results, or if you're not just getting started, you may pick a high percentage, but you're going to have some offsetting tax credits for the things that mm-hmm. you spend money on. So it's not 100% of what you collect as tax that will need to be remitted. But by taking a large portion of that and keeping it on the side, you're going to have the money when you need to pay the government. You're not going to be super stressed, because that is one of the biggest stresses for entrepreneurs. Their cash flow is so tight and they do need mm-hmm. to use money that's not technically theirs. And that's how we do need to think about it. You're holding it in trust for the government till you deliver it to them. So why not keep it separate? Don't even get tempted. I have never heard the suggestion of not even linking it to your bank card. So if you think it might be a problem for you, then don't link it to your bank card, but keep it separate. And then it's easier to get that temptation out of your mind and knowing right off the bat that that is somebody else's money and I shouldn't spend that.
Awesome. Awesome. Tracy, listen, I am sure my followers will want to know more about what you do and what you offer. So definitely we're going to send them to the website you just mentioned, but can people find you somewhere else as well?
Absolutely. So the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. So it's Tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y, and my last name is Bissett, B-I-S-S-E-T-T. I would love to hear from anybody who's listening today. Send me a message with any questions you have, any comments, and love to hear from people listening. So thank you so much, De Niro.
No problem. Thank you so much, and we'll have you back soon. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
And this is it for today, Game Changers. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the podcast and you will be the very first person to know when we release new episodes. Also, do not forget to leave a review. It literally takes a minute. It makes my day brighter. And if you send me a screenshot for a limited time on Instagram or by email, you will get a free 15-minute coaching call worth $50. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in the next episode.